98 AM in Montreal.
Hello, you're listening to CJLO News. Montreal is facing extreme heat. Temperatures on Monday, June 23rd, reached 46 degrees with the Humidex. Environment and Climate Change Canada issued a heat warning, and the Quebec Health Ministry advised people to stay cool and hydrated to avoid heat-related illness. One Concordian professor, Dr. Lengzhu Leon Wang, is warning that those in denser, low-income areas with older buildings are particularly vulnerable during extreme weather.
I mean, those regions and buildings we call vulnerable buildings or communities in the context of heat waves.
Wang is the associate director for the Center for Zero Energy Building Studies. His research focuses on making buildings more resilient to extreme weather events like heat waves. Wang explains that areas like Rosemont, Park Extension, and here in Côte de Neige, where older buildings are grouped closer together, absorb more heat and create risks for residents.
In the past few years, we've been collecting data across Montreal, including schools, long-term care homes, hospitals, and social housing.
Wang is advocating that municipal and national building codes account for more extreme heat, with factors like better insulation, retrofits, and cooling systems.
We need more efforts and investment, right? To, I think, at least from government or municipality, so that we can have a better buildings and community, and in terms of policy making and developing policy, we can help the, in particular, low-income communities to retrofit their building. And also on the community level, provide emergency services, like say, if the building is not ready for heat waves, in the community level, can we provide some guidance or support, like we call probably some local cooling services.
He suggests that with climate change increasing the frequency of extreme weather events, these considerations are vital for health and safety. For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome live to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hope everyone is doing well. Man, Man, it's good to be back. We were off the last 2 weeks because of Saint Jean Baptiste and because of Canada Day, but it is good to be back, and we got a jam-packed show for you guys today. We have to recap everything that happened in NHL free agency, the NHL draft, huge trades. We will get into all of it. Big news in the NBA today that involves the Miami Heat, so we'll get into that as well. NFL training camp right around the corner, and Wimbledon is into its second week. We will get into all of it here over the next hour on the Tommy John Show. If you're new to the program, remember to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you name it. The Tommy John Show is on it. So we would appreciate if you send us a follow and check out our other content as well. So hope everyone's doing well. And we will quickly go over the Wimbledon scoreboard right now. We are into the second week. And Novak Djokovic is looking for another title on the grass. He got through the 11th seed from Australia today, Alex de Minaur, in four sets. Lost the first one, 6-1, but he rebounded beautifully, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4. He won the next three sets, and Novak Djokovic is off to the quarterfinals of Wimbledon. The number one seed, Jannik Sinner, will play Grigor Dimitrov in about 20 minutes or so on center court. They're waiting for one of the women's matches to be done between Andreeva and Navarro, so that match will take place when the Navarro match is concluded. We will quickly go to the women's scoreboard right after this. A big news, if you're an American tennis fan, Ben Shelton looking to punch his ticket to the quarterfinals of Wimbledon. He is up a set right now, 2-1 actually, and they're on serve in the fourth set between him and the Italian Lorenzo Sonego. So that is going on right now. And if we go from yesterday's scores, man, Carlos Alcaraz had to dig deep in the last three sets. He lost the first one, 7-6 in a tiebreak. Hard-fought set. Rublev took it off him, but he rebounded beautifully in the final three sets. 6-3, 6-4, 6-4. He took sets 2-4, and he is off to the quarterfinals. Carlos Alcaraz looking for his third straight Wimbledon title, just won the French Open in that classic, which we talked about last month. He is looking to do the double in the summer again. So he's off to a fantastic start to this tournament. Four great matches to start off. He is off to the quarterfinals. Taylor Fritz, the number five seed. He struggled early in the tournament, had to win a couple of five setters. He got a nice easy day yesterday, took the first set 6-1 over the Australian Jordan Thompson, and then he was up 3-love in the second, and Thompson had to withdraw due to injury, and Taylor Fritz is off to the quarterfinals as well. For the UK fans, they have one person to root for. It was supposed to be the number four seed, Jack Draper, but he lost to Marin Cilic earlier on in the tournament. But it's Cam Nori, who won a thrilling five-setter yesterday over Nicolas Jarry of Chile, 6-3, 7-6, 6-7, 6-7, 6-3. He is off to the quarterfinals, where he will face Carlos Alcaraz, and the Russian Karen Khachanov won in straight sets in the round of 16. He is off to the quarterfinals as well. The other quarterfinal player will be an Italian. It's Flavio Cobelli, who won in four sets today over Marin Cilic. And the other match we're waiting for, like I mentioned, is between Shelton and Sonego, and Jannik Sinner and Grigor Dimitrov, which starts up in about 15-20 minutes. Man, the women's side is absolutely breathtaking, what's going on. We have big names. We have unseeded players. It's just a hot mess. A lot of the seeds at Wimbledon this year, whether it was the men's side, the women's side, we had Coco Gauff losing in the first round. It was nuts. Absolute mayhem. Jessica Pegula lost early on. It was... So many A-list stars in the women's side and the men's side lost early. The men's, we can go through it. Obviously, Alex Zverev lost early on. Stefano Tsitsipas lost early on. Holger Rune lost early on. So a bunch of top 10 seeds just lost right away. And it could be that the grass season comes so fast after the clay court season. They're not used to the new surface yet, which is fair. But still, to have those caliber players not make the third round, let alone the quarterfinals, is surprising. So there's a lot of major upsets with Jack Draper, another one we mentioned. He was the four seed. A lot of people had high hopes for him playing at home from the UK. Loves grass. Won Indian Wells earlier in the year. He's definitely one of the top five players in the world. And for him to go out in the way that he did was very surprising as well. So we'll quickly go through the rest of the women's scoreboard. The number one seed, of course, Arina Sabalenka from Belarus, 6-4, 7-6. She beat Elise Mertens yesterday. She's off to the quarterfinal. Anisimova and Amanda Anisimova from the United States, a 13 seed. She's off to the quarterfinal as well. She won in three sets. Anastasia Pavluchikova, she's off to the quarterfinals as well. Not to mention, a big surprise, Laura Siegemund from Germany. She absolutely dominated Solana Sierra from Argentina, 6-3, 6-2. She's off to the quarterfinals. If we go from today's results, Samsonova, she's off to the quarterfinals with a 7-5, 7-5 win over the Spaniard Jessica Monero. But man, Belinda Bencic, she's been around a long time, been competitive in major championships. She is going back to a major quarterfinal, 7-6, 6-4 over Alexandrova in that round of 16 match. We mentioned Maria Andreeva, the number 7 seed. She won the first set 6-2, up a break in the second over the 10 seed American Emma Navarro. That match still going on center court. And later today on court 1, the number 8 seed Iga Swiatek taking on the Dane Clara Tosin. So that's where we stand at Wimbledon. The final will be next Saturday for the women, the July 12th. Sunday, July 13th for the men. So that's our quick little tennis recap as well. We'll get it quickly into the Formula One from yesterday. Lando Norris benefited from a 10-second penalty from his teammate Oscar Piastri, and he wins the British Grand Prix. McLaren 1-2, and a big surprise. You had Nico Hülkenberg in a kick sauber finishing third. Lewis Hamilton's podium streak is over at the British Grand Prix. He finishes fourth, Max Verstappen in fifth. So there's your quick little F1 recap. And those were the major sporting events from the weekend. Quickly into Major League Baseball, and the Toronto Blue Jays just do not know how to lose baseball games right now. Unbelievable stretch from the Toronto Blue Jays. They have now won 8 in a row. They are on fire. They swept the Yankees 4 games during the week last week. Then the Angels come into town this weekend, and they swept them as well. All close games, 4-3 in extras on Friday, 4-3 in extras on Saturday, and then a 3-2 win yesterday thanks to a Bo Bichette home run. And everything's working for the Blue Jays now. We've heard about Shapiro and Atkins talk about they need internal improvements. They don't have to make a big trade. My God, have the internal improvements been fantastic, because players coming up from Buffalo and the minor leagues have stepped up in the biggest way possible. And if you look at the Blue Jays, they now went from being 3 to 4 games back of the Yankees to now having a 3-game lead over the Yankees, because the Yankees have just gone in the other direction. They have been horrendous over the last few weeks. They're 3-7 in their last 10, and they got their doors blown off in Toronto. Then they lose 2-3 from the Mets. Then they get beat up by the Cincinnati Reds a couple of times as well. Not to mention they lost a game 7-0 to the A's. It's just been a hot mess recently for the New York Yankees. And as a result, teams like Toronto, teams like Tampa Bay in their division have climbed up the standings. And they look fantastic right now, Toronto. Their pitching was good over the weekend. I thought Gausman pitched pretty well, aside from the homer he gave up in the first inning to Mike Trout, but he was pitching well, got out of a few jams. Same with Max Scherzer. Max Scherzer is older. He's in his 40s. I thought he pitched pretty well on Saturday afternoon. He got out of a few jams as well. You saw flashes, though. In the second inning, he struck out the side, looked like the Cy Young winning Max Scherzer. And then you saw what a 40-year-old pitcher looks like at times, too, because he got into some very bad situations. And I understand the defense let him down at some points. But still, overall, if you're the Blue Jays, from where you were a few weeks ago, you didn't know if Max Scherzer was ever going to pitch again, and you weren't really loving your pitching staff the way they were performing. But Berrios has picked it up. Chris Bassett has picked it up. Kevin Gausman's always been a good pitcher. What they will do at the deadline, because this team is going to be in a playoff chase regardless, even if they just play 500 baseball the rest of the way, because the American League really stinks. You have Detroit, you have Houston, but outside of that, it's who? Seattle? Maybe Tampa Bay? If you think about it, how many great teams? Look in the American League right now. You have four teams in the East who are over 500, and the Red Sox are one of them, and they haven't been anything spectacular. Then you have Detroit playing 626 baseball. That's the only team over 500 in the American League Central. And if you go to the American League West, it's the Astros who have been on fire. And then you have the Mariners who are at 533 baseball, and that's it. Seriously, the Blue Jays are going to be a playoff team this year, and if they want to take advantage of these hot bats, then at the deadline, I'm sorry, you're going to have to get some arms. They're going to need to get people in the bullpen. It's nothing against the pitchers they have, but even on Saturday, they were forced, forgetting his name now, the kid from Cuba, he was forced to come in. It was his MLB debut, and he had to pitch a couple of innings for him. They just need to have rested arms, need to have experienced arms in that bullpen, and I would like to see the Blue Jays do something. I'd like to. The bats are fine right now, and we all know in the playoffs it's all about pitching. You need good starting pitching, and you need great relief pitching. The Blue Jays need to add some arms. You're going to call your Colorados. You're going to call your Chicago White Sox. You're even going to call the Oakland A's and teams like that who have no business. No business holding on the assets for where they are. They just need to build up their farm systems, kick the can down the road of being competitive because they're awful baseball teams, but they might have one or two good pitchers. You call those teams. Obviously, the Dodgers, the Padres, the Cubs, Milwaukee, the Mets, the Phillies, they aren't straight any of their pitchers. So if you're the Blue Jays, you're going to have to call those teams in the bottom of the American League, the bottom of the National League, and see if you can get some arms. Because if the bats are going to be good. I know George Springer's hitting out of his mind, and Addison Barger, who just got called up a few months ago, is hitting out of his mind, and Vladdy's getting hot. Bo Bichette with a big home run yesterday. It's not going to continue. Like, you can't have these guys hitting, like, George Springer was hitting 513 or something over his last 18 games. It's impossible to keep that pace up, and not saying they won't hit well the rest of the year, but you need to get some arms in the bullpen in case the bats go quiet for a bit. And in the playoffs, when you're facing elite arms, the bats might go quiet for a bit. How do you counter? You pitch well yourself. They got good starting pitching. If you can roll in the postseason five starting pitchers that are quality, then the Blue Jays are in good shape. They have four, in my opinion. Berrios is a quality pitcher in the majors. Obviously, Kevin Gausman's been a Cy Young finalist before. Chris Bassett's on a big contract. They would like Max Scherzer to be that still at this age. And not to mention, they've been getting good pitching from this Lauer kid as well. So right now, they have four proven starters in Major League Baseball. We don't know about Lauer yet. But if you look at the relief pitching, Yimi Garcia just went on the IL. Like, who's going to step up? They got a good closer in Hoffman. Not saying their relief pitching's bad, but they might need to get some more arms before the deadline if I'm the Blue Jays. They're playing unbelievable baseball. They're 9-1 in their last 10, 8 in a row. And luckily for them, before the All-Star break, they got the White Sox and the A's. The White Sox and the A's. If they can take 5 of 6 or even sweep both of those series, and that's easier said than done because the White Sox took 2 of 3 from the Jays in Toronto a few weeks ago. So it's not just like they have to show up and they'll win the baseball games. The Blue Jays need to play just consistent baseball like they have been, and they should take at worst 4 of 6 from that from those two series, those six games, but 3 between the White Sox and 3 between the A's. If they can go 6 for 6, that's a dream, but a 5 out of 6 road trip just to keep their foot on the gas and put distance between them and the Yankees. Because it's not just the Yankees they're battling against. It is the Tampa Bay Rays as well. Even the Red Sox, who, as a diehard Red Sox fan, I don't think we're anywhere close to the Blue Jays or the Rays at the minute, or the Yankees, but they're only 6.5 back. So you have 3 teams within 7 games of you, so there's no room to take off. There's no time to take your foot off the pedal. You look at your, you've gone through a tough stretch of games. You've played the Yankees. You've played all these tough teams. You've played the Phillies a bunch. Now it's, they finally get some good games against lesser teams. And I hate saying that, but it's true, the truth. It's nice to see the White Sox. Nice to see the A's. It's nice to see the Orioles pop, the Rockies popping up on that schedule coming soon. But if you look at the Blue Jays, this is the tough part of their schedule might be in the past. Like White Sox, A's, yes, San Francisco after the All-Star break is a tough one. The Yankees will be tough, and the Tigers. But after that, you get the Baltimore, you get the Colorado Rockies, you get the Marlins, the Pirates, the Texas Rangers. There's a lot of winnable series down the stretch for the Blue Jays. And if they can continue this right now, then they are the favorites to win the American League East, which did not seem like a possibility. Even a month ago, maybe even 3 weeks ago, didn't even seem like a possibility. But they're playing unbelievable baseball, and if you have not been watching the Blue Jays, I recommend that you do. They are just an exciting team, and they put themselves, they don't make it easy all the time. They were up 8-0 on the Yankees a few nights ago, and they blew the lead and had to come back and win it in the ninth inning. That, I mean, it'd be easier not to win games like that. The dramatic extra innings on Friday and Saturday, they're not the easiest wins. They're not smoking teams 10-1, but they're still getting good results in winning those ball games. It's good that they win games like this, prepares them for the postseason when games get much tighter. But I'm very impressed by Toronto. That was my quick thoughts on the Blue Jays playing fantastic baseball. 8 in a row, are the hottest team in baseball right now. And right now have a 3-game lead on both the Tampa Bay Rays and the New York Yankees, who had a rough series with the Blue Jays over the week and a tough one with the Mets over the weekend, even though they got the last one of that 3-game series yesterday against the Mets. Quickly to the National League, it's the Phillies with a 1.5-game lead over the Mets. We go to the National League Central, it's still the Cubs cruising atop of the Central. They have a 4-game lead over the Milwaukee Brewers and a 6.5-game lead over the St. Louis Cardinals. And a big surprise, the Cincinnati Reds are playing much better baseball. They're over 500. They're 8 games back of the Cubs. We head to the National League West, and the Dodgers, despite having a rough weekend with the Houston Astros, are still cruising atop of the National League West. They have a 7-game lead over the San Diego Padres and the San Francisco Giants. And the Giants, since trading for Rafi Devers, have not played their best baseball. I don't expect that to happen much longer. They're too talented. They added a great bat in Devers. I think the Giants are probably going to turn the corner coming up. But recently, they have not been playing as well. So it's still the Dodgers as the heavy favorites in the National League and probably of all of baseball. You just look at that roster, and there's reports Tyler Glasnow is pitching in the minor league. So he'll be back in that rotation with Yamamoto and Kershaw and Glasnow, and if that Sasaki kid's up and Ohtani, I mean, good luck. Good luck stopping that pitching staff, and let alone the bats. They still have Mookie Betts. Ohtani's playing like the Ohtani of every single year. Freddie Freeman's an all-star again. Teoscar Hernandez is swinging the bat well. The Dodgers are absolutely loaded, and it's a reason why they are the defending champions, and they got better, which is very scary as well. They got better. And it's going to be tough for every team to beat the Dodgers come the playoffs. But there's a reason you play the games. And if you're the Toronto Blue Jays, the way your bats are swinging right now, just go out, get some more quality pitching in the bullpen, and you could be right there competing for a world championship. That's how well the Blue Jays are playing right now. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the big moves in NHL free agency. Mitch Marner heading to Vegas, Nikolaj Ehlers heading from Winnipeg to Carolina. Petrangelo, he reports he's not going to play next year with Vegas. There's some issues off the ice. We'll get into that. Jonathan Toews in a Winnipeg Jets uniform. Just a lot of big moves happening in the National Hockey League, and we will get into all of it here on the Tommy John Show. We will be right back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Do you feel that? Something's definitely in the air. Yeah, something's up. Something weird is going on. I just feel like my summer's missing something. Missing. Introducing, for the first time ever, Something Fest, a community-led venue crawl festival hosted right here in Montreal. Three shows, three venues, one day, back to back to back, with artists like Superstar Crush, Blood Farts, Hanako, Kiana Lass, The Satisfactory, Rachel Red, and many more. The music will run from 1 to 11 p.m., spanning a wide variety of genres and kicking an even wider variety of butt. What's even better is that all profits from the festival will go to NDG Food Not Bombs. So if you want to support charity in the arts community and hear great music while doing it, buy a ticket to Something Fest. Available now on somethingfest.ca or on Instagram at somethingfestmtl.
Fret, there's always Brave New Jams, your source for the best in improvisational rock and roll. That's Brave New Jams, Saturday, 10 p.m. till midnight, on CJLO, 1690 a.m., CJLO.com.
Here on the Tommy John Show. So yeah, the big news in the NBA, we'll mention it. The Miami Heat have acquired Norman Powell, former Toronto Raptor, from the Clippers in a three-team trade that includes Utah. I'm looking here. The Clippers will receive John Collins and Kevin Love, Kyle Anderson, and a Clippers second rounder will go to the Jazz. Norman Powell to the Heat, and he averaged over 20 points a game this year, 21.8 points a game. So that's a nice addition for the Miami Heat. And Utah is just trying to move around, move some salaries around. They are clearly rebuilding. They got the guard, though, from Rutgers in the draft. So they're slowly building things up in Utah. And the other big thing was the Kevin Durant deal, which we mentioned a few weeks ago. It's now a seven-team trade. It's the first ever seven-team trade in NBA history, with the Hawks being involved, the Nets being involved, Golden State, the Rockets, obviously, the Lakers, the Timberwolves, the Suns. They were all involved in the deal. So it becomes the biggest trade in NBA history, involving the most teams. So that is a big story as well. And I've said it on our Tommy John Show Instagram, which you can check out. I love the deal for the Houston Rockets. They're right there in the Western Conference. I understand Oklahoma City won the title this year. They have all these young, up-and-coming players. They still have 100 million picks with Sam Presti as the GM, but they still have Fred VanVleet there. They still have this Amen Thompson kid. They still have Sengun. They have really good. Jabari Smith's a very good player. You add Kevin Durant to that mix, who still, at this point of his career, is one of the better scorers in the NBA. You know Ime Udoka is going to preach defense, and he plays decent defense. I understand he's not Dennis Rodman, but come on, he's still, at his size and his length, he gets a lot of steals, deflects a lot of shots. They just needed a star scorer, and that's what Kevin Durant is. So that was a great move by the Houston Rockets. And to me, they are one of the three best teams in the Western Conference. You still got to put Oklahoma City there. And I'm encouraged by what I'm seeing in Denver. They let Michael Porter Jr.'s contract go out the door. If you have Nikola Jokic, to me, you're right there in the Western Conference. They almost took down the Thunder. They went seven games on a way, way, way worse team. So they're making some moves in the offseason. To me, Denver will be right there, and you got to put Houston. You really do. The other big news from the NBA this week, DeAndre Ayton signed with the Lakers. So let's see. Maybe their defense might be an issue, but now they got a center who can score and facilitate a little bit, which is nice. So DeAndre Ayton, former number one overall pick, is going to Los Angeles. It was bought out by Portland, I believe. So that was the other big news in the NBA. Now to the NHL. So the big, big news obviously has to be Mitch Marner, not just because he played in Toronto, but he's a 100-point player. He's an all-star. He's one of the 20 best players in the world. And he's off to Vegas in a sign-and-trade. Nick Waugh goes back to Toronto. And the reason why, if you don't know, they traded him, despite him being about to be a free agent on July 1, is Vegas wanted that eighth year. The new CBA is coming up. That will be reduced to 7 years if you're with your old team. And if you're unrestricted free agent, it'll be a six-year deal. Marner could have signed and Toronto could have gotten nothing for a seven-year times $12 million deal. But Vegas wanted the eighth year. Marner's camp wanted the eighth year, another $12 million bucks in the bank. They make the deal and Mitch Marner inks an eight-year deal with the Vegas Golden Knights. But still a good addition for Toronto. They were going to lose him for nothing. So they get Nick Waugh, who can play as your third-line center. He's a big, physical center. To me, that was a good pickup, considering he was just going to walk out the door for nothing. So they get a player who will be involved on that third line, who's going to kill penalties. He's going to be physical. He'll give the Leafs a new look, which is nice. To get something for Mitch Marner with him leaving. And I understand that if he waived his no-trade clause, it could have gotten Mikko Rantanen. I understand that. That's all fine and dandy. But he didn't do that at the deadline. He said, well, no, I want to stay in Toronto. And he ends up leaving in free agency to go to Vegas. And people are bringing up that tax issue. And I understand it, and it's a good point. You know, if you play in Montreal, you play in Toronto, you play in New York, California, you're going to get taxed more. I understand that. And if you go to Florida or Texas or Nevada, you know, they ain't going to touch a dime or hardly anything. And that is a factor. But also, Vegas is a great hockey team. Let's not act like the Golden Knights aren't there every year. They're the last team not named Florida to win the Cup. They were there 2 years ago. They're always in the playoffs. They're the best team in the Pacific in the regular season every year. It's not like Mitch decided to go up to Vegas and they were a 10-win hockey team and they were picking in the lottery. That's just not the case. The Vegas Golden Knights are one of the 5 to 6 best teams in the National Hockey League, and him and Jack Eichel is going to be one hell of a duo. I mean, Eichel's, since coming from Buffalo, he had good years in Buffalo where he's a 70-point guy, 80-point guy, and he gets out of Buffalo mostly because he didn't want to do that operation he wanted to do on his knee or his back. I'm forgetting right now what the exact injury was, and he wanted out. Vegas took a chance on him, didn't know if that surgery was going to go well. It went well, and now Jack Eichel's, what, one of the 5 to 6 best centers in the NHL. He's a two-way machine. He was pretty close to 100 points this year. He's going to get probably 100 points with Mitch Marner now on that power play, on that wing, and I'm interested to see how the Leafs are going to line up now. I assume they're going to play Nylander with Matthews and Knies. That would probably be the play. But if they put Nylander with Tavares, like, how many points is Matthews going to get now? I'm not saying Mitch Marner made Austin Matthews, but I am going to say Mitch Marner made Austin Matthews' life a little bit easier. He got far better looks, way more scoring chances with Mitch Marner as his winger. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works. But Toronto, they needed to switch things up a bit. And I understand Mitch Marner's 100-point player and everything that he does in the regular season, and he helps make the Toronto Maple Leafs a playoff team every year. I understand that. But once the Leafs get there, they just can't get over the line. And whether this works out or not for Toronto, obviously they probably wanted Mitch to stay. If Mitch wanted to stay, he'd probably be back. But could this be a blessing in disguise? I don't know. They brought this same team, not the same team exactly, but the same core every year. It was Matthews, it was Marner, it was Tavares, Nylander, Morgan Rielly. They were bringing the same group to the postseason every year, and they would go home at best in the second round. That's what it was every year. And it's easy to throw Marner under the bus because of how bad he's played in Game 7s and Game 6s. Fair enough, but he was still their second best player. Nothing against William Nylander. Nothing against John Tavares at this age. Auston Matthews was their best player. Mitch Marner was their second best player. That's it. That was it. And then there was a gap to William Nylander. I understand Nylander's a 40-goal scorer, and he's one of the highest-paid wingers in hockey. I understand that. But Mitch Marner did, he killed penalties. He played on the top line. He was their second best player. He was. And playoffs, you can show, oh, William Nylander had better playoff numbers. He also played on the second line as well. Let's not forget that. So Nylander got far more opportunities to succeed than Mitch Marner. And he played with Tavares and he played with other good players. I'm not trying to throw William Nylander under the bus, but if you look at look who he's playing against. Marner was always against the top defensive pairs. He played against the best two-way lines. They had to play against the Barkov lines. They had to play against that top pair of Seth Jones and Forsling in the postseason. That's a major, major difference. But if you're Toronto, this might be a blessing in disguise because they needed to shake things up, whether they wanted to or not. They need to get a new identity. And bringing in a guy like Nick Waugh, that's not a good deal if Marner was under contract. Might be one of the worst deals of all time. I understand that. But they got a big physical center in a transaction where the guy was going to leave for nothing anyway. So to me, it's a good pickup for them. Now they got way more relief in cap space because they got Marner's, $11 million off the books, which is a huge, huge deal for them. And I'm interested to see what Toronto does for it. Obviously, they didn't land a big free agent so far, mostly because Florida tied up all the guys Toronto wanted. They were interested in Marchand. They were interested in Sam Bennett. They were going to call Aaron Ekblad of reports, and all three of them go back to Florida on good deals. So the three guys they were probably going to throw the Marner money at in the offseason stayed in Florida. But this does not rule out a trade, does not rule out them going to get another good player in return. So I don't hate it from Toronto's perspective. How many times are they going to bring back the same core and lose in the second or first round? Isn't the definition of insane doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result? That was the Maple Leafs for the past 10 years. In the Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares era, just look at it. Washington, they lose in the first round. How many times did the Bruins in the first round they lose? Three? They lost to Columbus in the bubble. They lost to Tampa Bay in Game 7. They lost to Florida in the second round twice. They just cannot get over the line in these big games, in these big series, to get to a conference final, to get to a Stanley Cup final. It's just they don't produce. And what's really interesting for me is how the other three players are going to play. Tavares reports people wanted him out as well. But he wanted to stay in Toronto, and he took a crazy team-friendly deal at only $4.5 million a year. He took the Matt Duchene deal to stay in Toronto, and if he hit free agency, he was probably going to get a number that started with a 7 or 8 per year. So he took pretty much half to stay in Toronto. That is a very good deal for the Maple Leafs. You got to keep John Tavares at that number. Mitch Marner's now gone. But they locked up Matthew Nyes. Marner getting Nick Waugh, that's going to be a good fit on their third line. Now I'm interested to see what they do because I don't think the Leafs are done right now. But if you look at it for Toronto, they needed this. They needed something to change. It couldn't be Nylander. He has no move clause. It couldn't be Auston Matthews. He has a no move clause, and he's your first line center. Morgan Riley still has term. John Tavares took a crazy team-friendly deal. As bad as it sounds, Mitch Marner was the expendable one. Mitch Marner was the one that you could just let him go, get a little bit of something in return for a team that wanted an eighth year, in this case, Vegas. Marner was pretty much only eyeing Vegas since last year. You had a feeling he was going to move on. To me, this was the perfect player to move on from. Now, he's going to hurt them. He's going to hurt Matthew's production. I understand that. But now they got more money to work with. They can go get players that can help them come the postseason. They finally have stability in net with Wall and Stolarz. To me, if Stolarz is in that series against Florida, maybe it's a different result. He was playing that well for Toronto before he got knocked out of that series. So they finally have stability in net. I think their defense is better than it has been in the last few years. Tanev played really well. Morgan Riley's still there. Oliver Ekman-Larsson's under contract. Jake McCabe. They have a lot of good players under contract. Their defense is pretty solid to me. What they needed was an identity and some depth scoring in that bottom six, which now losing a guy at 11.5 per year allows you to spend some money. Whether it's through a trade or next offseason, I think the Leafs down the road might be better for it. They have Tavares going from $11 million down to $4.5 million, and they completely, completely have Mitch Marner's money off the books. How many star players can you have? You have Nylander, who's a star. You have Matthews, who's a star. You got to spread the money around. Look at Florida. Look at Tampa Bay. Look at all these other great teams in the NHL. Colorado. They had to make a tough decision with Rantanen. Look at Dallas now. They're forced to sell trade pieces away because they're in salary cap hell. Toronto now, for the first time in a long time, have cap space. Brad Treliving can make some moves. The one thing they don't have a lot of is draft picks and prospects because they've traded them away over the years trying to compete for a cup. I understand that. But they have cap space and they have holes in that bottom six. So to me, that would make perfect sense if they were to go and look to add in that area. Nothing against Max Domi. Nothing against Yarncroak. Nothing against all those guys. But they need more depth in that bottom six. They do. And John Tavares, probably by the end of that contract at $4.5 million, will be a third line center. So that will help out. I thought he was going to take $8 million a year, $7.5 million a year. $4.25 million, whatever it was, that is huge for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I don't know which deal they're going to do. I don't know which players they're going to look at. Probably some players with a bit of bite, some sandpaper. They're going to be tough to play against in the playoffs. That's what they need. Look what Florida did to them. Look what Boston did to them in years past. They're just not physical enough in the playoffs. Adding Chris Tanev was a good start last year. Adding Ekman-Larsson, okay, fair enough. I sort of understood what they're trying to do with Ryan Reeves, but they need Sam Bennett, Brad Marchand-type players. Maybe a Travis Konecny, guys like that. Play with grit. Play with tenacity. We'll fight if you need them to. Just something different. It's great to have 100-point wingers that make $12 million a year, $11.6 million a year. But Toronto had that team for the last 10 years, and it got them to the second round twice. They needed to switch things up, and as much as it hurts to lose Mitch Marner for one player in Nick Roy, basically want to go to Vegas since last offseason. As much as that hurts, he's a hometown kid. He's a 100-point player. He's an all-star every year. He's a first-line player for Team Canada. That all hurts. I understand that. But it might be a blessing in disguise. More money to work with, and you can get better players to play in that bottom six where they've been lacking in the last few years. It might be a blessing in disguise. Now, if you look at the Montreal Canadiens and what they did so far in free agency, you have to like it. As a Bruins fan, I have to admit, you have to like it. My Bruins free agency, as great as our draft was, getting James Higgins and getting all these other young kids from the U.S. developmental program and from Boston College, as great as that is, now you finally have a decent prospect pool. Their free agency was just as bad. Tanner Janot had a five-year deal at $3 million or something. It was a horrendous deal. Horrendous deal. Victor Arvidsson, okay, that's fine. It's a 1 year, fair enough. But if they tried to extend Arvidsson, oh boy. So as much as it hurts me to say that, I have to admit, our biggest rival, the team here in Montreal, are doing a good job. And people are hung up on the number they gave up for the number they paid Noah Dobson. I don't think anyone has a problem with the trade. It wasn't an amazing draft class at that position anyway. It was very top-heavy after Schaefer, after Misa, after really where the Bruins and Flyers picked. There weren't a lot of elite prospects. So Montreal giving up the two picks in this year's draft and Emil Heinemann. And as fine as Heinemann's been, he's not going to be a top six player, in my opinion. That's just the vibe I get on him. You give up that to go get Noah Dobson, who's a proven top four, top pairing defenseman. That's fine. But I feel like what I've been asking around with my friends and other people who love the Canadiens is that they didn't like the 9.5 number, which is a bit surprising to me. I think it's just a bit strange now because Noah Dobson, who hasn't even played a game for the Canadiens yet, is their highest paid player. But the cap's going through the roof over the next 3 years. And I'm sorry, you need to pay top pairing defensemen that kind of money. And what do you think Cale McCarr is on? $9 million, $9.5 million now. He's not going to get that on his next contract. He's not. He signed that years ago. Charlie McAvoy is not going to get 9.5 on the contract he has now. He's making that now. Next contract, it's going to start with a $10, $11, $12 million. Same goes for all the other young elite defensemen in the NHL. So the cap going up, Noah Dobson at $9.5 million is not horrible. Would you have rathered it at 7 or 8? Sure, but that's not realistic. And reports came from his agents with the Islanders. He's looking for $10, $11 million. So Montreal getting it at 9.5 for 8 years. And look at that top four now. For next year, you're going to have Matheson in that top four. Lane Hudson won the Calder last year. Noah Dobson, you're going to play Struble in there. Not to mention you have the young kid Reinbacher coming up, who's a former top five pick, right shot defenseman. There's a lot of great young defensemen that Montreal have, and they're building a very good back end. What's going to be interesting for Montreal is how this Mailloux trade will work out, because if you didn't hear, they traded Logan Mailloux to the Blues, and he was expendable. Once they brought in Noah Dobson, I mean, where is he going to play on the right-hand side? Where is he going to play? They have Dobson there. They took Reinbacher over Michkov a few drafts ago, so they picture him being a top-pairing defenseman eventually, or a top-four defenseman eventually. Why on earth would they keep Logan Mailloux if they can help that forward group that's been lacking in the bottom six? To me, that makes absolutely zero sense. So if they could go get something, which they did from St. Louis, they go get Zach Bolduc, who is a 6'1" physical winger and honestly had a very good year last year with the St. Louis Blues. He popped off the screen when I watched St. Louis several times. He had 19 goals, 36 points last year, and he's just getting better and better and better. And he can fly and hit. He's physical. He made himself known this year in St. Louis. So to me, it's going to be a very, very good move for the Montreal Canadiens. Not saying Mailloux is not going to be a good player in the NHL. Not saying Logan Mailloux is a bust or anything like that. But once you bring in Noah Dobson and you have Hudson there and you have Reinbacher coming up and you have Struble there and Jack Eye, Matheson's still there, where's Mailloux going to play? How is he going to play another year in Laval, or he can go get an asset that can help the Canadiens this year? So far, the moves Montreal has made in the offseason, I've really liked them. I've always been a fan of Noah Dobson. He's a great skater. People can rip his defensive play and say it's not at an elite level yet, which is fine. But he's only, 24, 25 years old? He's offensively gifted. Now Montreal have two defensemen that can run power plays. Obviously, we saw what Hudson can do on it last year. Not saying Matheson did a bad job on the second unit last year, but if you can drop Noah Dobson to run your second power play unit, that's a huge, huge, huge get for the Montreal Canadiens. And yes, two first-round picks, and Emil Heinemann's a lot to pay, but it's two first-round picks and a below-average draft and a bottom six forward for you to go get a top-pairing guy. To me, you do that trade all day long and you get the 8 years extension as well. I really like that move for Montreal. So I like what the Canadiens are doing. I think Toronto, that Marner thing, is a blessing in disguise. And if you look at the Eastern Conference this year, Montreal could be one of those top three teams. They easily could. We'll see what Toronto does. Well, obviously, Florida, we all assume, is going to be there, and in Tampa Bay, but who else? I don't think Boston's heading in the right direction at all. Maybe Ottawa, but the Senators just brought back Claude Giroux. I don't know. Like, they haven't done much yet in the postseason. But Detroit, for me, is really not going anywhere. The Sabres are a disaster. The Bruins, God only knows. Montreal can easily be a playoff team again. And that is the floor now. They made the playoffs last year with a much worse team, in my opinion. Adding Noah Dobson and Bull Duke and maybe Reinbacher playing this year in the NHL will be huge for the Montreal Canadiens. Huge. So I really like their chances. And let's be honest, Montembeau is a good goalie. I hate that we have to keep doing this conversation. Oh my God. Look at Edmonton. Look who Edmonton played a net in the finals. Are we really gonna do this? Look who do the Flyers have now? Vladar? Look who the Penguins had. They gave Tristan Jarry a fortune. He can't stop a beach ball. Like, come on now. To say Montembeau is not a top half of the league goaltender or a top 20 goaltender would be lying. And Dobesh played very good in spots, not to mention they have the kid Fowler who's going to play in the AHL this year. Montreal's fine at the goaltender spot. They're fine now in the defensive back end. They've got a great first line. The one glaring weakness is that second line center. Now, whether they address it this year, whether they address it next year, I'm not sure. But I was very pleased to hear from Jeff Gorton, from Kent Hughes, from all those guys, is that they're not going to rush it. They're not going to win a cup this year anyway, which is completely valid. Why are they going to rush in, throw a center in that they don't love to put in the second line, lock him up, and then you're in deep trouble? To me, this year is just, can Kirby Dach play center and can he be healthy? That's the assignment on the second line. You know, Suzuki, Caulfield, Slifkovsky play well together. Everyone's excited to see this Dembidoff kid. Newhook's good on the wing. They still have Gallagher. They still have Josh Anderson. They still have guys in their bottom six who can produce. This year, for me, is can this defense take another step forward, and can Kirby Dach be a second line center in the NHL? Those are the big things I'm looking forward to this year for Montreal. Because if he can be a second line center, that saves you a ton of issues. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about some big news in the NFL and why I think the Steelers might be better off than people think. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. We back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
The Festival International Nuit d'Afrique, presented by TD, invites you to the 39th edition for the best of world music from July 8th to 20th. For 13 days, Montreal will be dancing and singing to the rhythms of Africa, the Caribbean, and Latin America. Full program and tickets on festivalnuitdafrique.com.
I say, what are you listening to there, old chap? Man, I'm listening to the Live Wire show on CJLO 1690 on your AM dial every Saturday from 9 till 10 in the morning.
Back here on Tommy John Show. So quickly recap the NHL draft. If you missed it from last week, we've been away the last 2 weeks because of the two holidays. So you had Matthew Schaefer going number one to the New York Islanders. Michael Misa, the center, second overall, a big physical center from the Saginaw Spirit. He goes to San Jose. Anton Frundell, the center from Sweden, goes to the Blackhawks at 3. Caleb Desnoyers from the Moncton Wildcats in the QMJHL goes 4 to Utah. Brady Martin, the center from the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, goes 5 to Nashville. Porter Martone from the Brampton Steelheads goes 6 to Philadelphia. James Higgins, center, goes to the Boston Bruins at 7 from Boston College. Jake O'Brien, the center from the Brantford Bulls in the OHL, goes 8 to Seattle. Radim Mertka goes 9, a defenseman from the Buffalo Sabres and the Seattle Thunderbirds. Roger McQueen goes 10th to Anaheim from the Brandon Wheat Kings. And if you didn't see, because he went to Anaheim, the draft was in LA. They like put him in a plane and immediately went to see Lightning McQueen, and he's wearing number 95, embracing that whole Cars Lightning McQueen thing. I thought that was pretty funny. Yeah, but a lot of Canadian centers picked. A lot of them. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and at 11, you had Benjamin Kandel, Canadian center from the Calgary Hitmen, goes to Pittsburgh. Another Canadian center, and Jack Nesbitt from the Windsor Spitfires, goes to Philadelphia. The Vancouver took Brandon Coutts at 15 from the Seattle Thunderbirds. He's a Canadian center. There's a whole lot of them. Calgary took one, Cole Reshney from the Victoria Royals. So a lot of Canadian centers taken in this draft. The Islanders, if you're wondering, from those two picks from Montreal, they got 16 and 17 from Montreal. They turned that into Victor Ekman, the right winger from Sweden, and defenseman Kayshon Aitonson from the Barrie Colts. Those are the two players they took at 16 and 17, along with Matthew Schaefer at number one overall from the Erie Otters, the defenseman. So that was a quick recap of the NHL draft. It was a good one. Like, it was a weird setup. I didn't like the Zoom calls on the screen. I thought that was kind of a dud. Hopefully they go back to when the GMs are on the floor. I loved that growing up. Now they're just Zoom meetings and all that stuff. It was kind of a weird little... I didn't really like it. I didn't like it at all. But, yeah, that was the NHL draft for this year. And next year, we all know what's coming. It's the Gavin McKenna draft. Look out. So teams are going to be tanking big time and hoping they get that ping pong ball to get Gavin McKenna, who we still do not know where he's playing college hockey next year if he decides to go that route. Plays in Medicine Hat in the WHL, lit up the WHL this year. He's met with Penn State, met with Michigan State. He's going to get a crazy NIL offer for 1 year. Let's see what happens. We still do not know where Gavin McKenna will be playing hockey next year. Will he stay in Medicine Hat? Will he go to Penn State? Will he go to Michigan State? Michigan, Notre Dame, who knows? We have no idea where Gavin McKenna is going. So when we find out, we will let you know in the program. Quickly to the Pittsburgh Steelers before we wrap up today's show. So they brought in Aaron Rodgers. And as crazy as Aaron Rodgers is off the field doing weird Netflix documentaries, going on every podcast, knowing the man, just doing a bunch of weird stuff in the offseason, as crazy as that is, he is still by far the best quarterback on this roster. It's not even close. Nothing against Mason Rudolph. Nothing against Will Howard, who was fantastic in the college football playoff for Ohio State this year. He's just not ready yet, and he was a fifth, sixth-round pick. He's not ready to play in the NFL just yet. So Aaron Rodgers, it makes all the sense in the world. Mike Tomlin is a player's coach. Aaron has said on countless occasions, even when he was with the Packers back in the day, that he had great respect for Mike Tomlin as a head coach. So I think he'll buy in for a little bit. Now, if things go off the rails, then fair enough. But this is a talented team. They have Jaylen Warren at running back. They just had Caleb Johnson as well, who was phenomenal at Iowa. They spent all that money and traded all those draft picks for DK Metcalf. So they have a true number one wide receiver. Because of that big trade with Miami last week, they got Jonnu Smith to go with Pat Freiermuth at tight end. The offensive line's okay. But you look at that defense, it's still going to be one of the league's best. You add Jalen Ramsey to Darius Slay at corner. You still have an elite front with TJ Watt and Cameron Hayward and Patrick Queen and Alex Highsmith. This is still one of the best defenses in football. It is. And Boswell's a clutch kicker. To me, the weakness on this team was at quarterback. And maybe that right side of the offensive line wasn't fantastic. But the Steelers are going to be a good football team again. They are. And they spent the first round pick on Derek Harmon, who went to Oregon. This is a very good football team. And the one thing that could hold them back is, A, their division's very tough because Baltimore's there. We like to think Cincinnati's defense is going to be a tad better. Can't get worse. And then Cleveland's kind of stinks. But you have four games a year against Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson. Not to mention, you have still one of the harder schedules in the NFL this year. It is a brutal schedule. But it has winnable games in there. Don't get me wrong. You still have the Patriots in there, who we don't know they're going to be. You still have the Browns twice. You still have teams that are unproven. You still have Miami. But look, you have Detroit. You have the Ravens twice, the Bengals twice. You have the Bills. You have the Chargers are going to be good. You have Green Bay on that schedule, Minnesota. So this is not a walk in the park by any means. But if Aaron Rodgers just plays half as good as he did in this Green Bay, or just played like he did the last month of the year in New York with this team, with that defense, with Mike Tomlin as a head coach, this can absolutely be a playoff team in the AFC. The real question is, can Aaron Rodgers get out of his own way, and can he be a team player once again? Because early in his career, when he was the Aaron Rodgers of old, and he was a good teammate, Green Bay was always competitive. This is the best defense he's had in a long time. And he has a proven winning head coach, and he has talent around him. Thank you for listening to this week's show of the Tommy John Show. We'll be back next Monday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, right here on CJLO 1690 AM.
You're listening.